Now, you've had a great time living abroad, working and travelling around for a few years, but then it's time to come home. And after the initial joy, you find yourself feeling lonely and disorientated, and your friends and family can't really understand why. This is what happened to my next guest, Olivia Mieza. Olivia returned to Australia after living in South Africa for 10 years, and she's with me now. Hi, Olivia.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right, more to the point, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. Tell me, what first led you to travel to South Africa?
I first got involved with the Oak Tree Foundation, which is a youth-run aid and development organisation. And I was volunteering with them, doing media work with them, and then I became on their board, and they're a youth-run organisation, so it was a young board,
right.
And I was in my early 20s. And after being involved for a couple of years, they had a trip going to South Africa, a three-week study tour, to see the projects in South Africa and understand what was it that we were raising money for and raising awareness for here in Australia, and what impact was it having over there in South Africa.
Sounds like a great 3 weeks.
It was. It was a life-changing 3 weeks. I always tell people I cried more than I'd ever cried, and I laughed more than I'd ever laughed. It was a roller coaster of a three-week trip, and I was really exposed to poverty, to the HIV and AIDS pandemic, to the resulting orphan generation. The region where we were in South Africa, one in three people are living with HIV. So it's not, it's a very different pandemic to the one we see here in Australia, where less than 1% of people are living with HIV. It's something that impacts every home, every family, every workplace, every school. And that really shocked me. And I found it really hard to come back here after having seen the way people live over there in such deep levels of poverty, with epidemics like HIV and AIDS and the orphan generation impacting society on all levels, and then to suddenly leave that all behind after a three-week trip and come back was really challenging.
So what did you do?
I kept going back. So the next trip, the following year, I went for a two-month trip, and then the year after I went on a one-year volunteer stay, and I was basically working with the Oak Tree Foundation's partners over in South Africa. And long story short, that 1 year turned into a 10-year stay. And I was over there, ended up working in the HIV and AIDS sector for an organisation called the Hillcrest AIDS Centre, where I was very lucky to be in the position of CEO. And it was a phenomenal season of my life. I also married a South African, and we had three children. And
so you devoted essentially a third of your life by then,
yes,
to living in another country.
That's right.
So after 10 years, you decide to return to Australia. How come?
We really made the choice for our children, thinking of all the opportunities that life in Australia could afford them, the free education, the free healthcare, the safety and security, the fact that I was only able to in my early 20s, decide I wanted to travel and I wanted to then stay and live in another country by virtue of the fact that I'd grown up in Australia, and here you have any opportunity you want to pursue.
Sure.
So I wanted the same opportunities and choices for my children. And at that point, we had three of them, and my husband and I made the decision that we needed to give them that opportunity of growing up here in Australia.
Well, speaking of growing up, I mean, I think it'd be fair to say, would you not think, Olivia, that you did a lot of your growing up in the 10 years you were living elsewhere in South Africa, deeply embedded in what was a great medical health and cultural need that you were fulfilling. I was reading that you organised the departure beautifully. You had all these wonderful farewells. There was a lot of ritual and ceremony and gathering and closeness and, you know, fondness for each other. Then you arrived back in Australia. What happened?
Yeah, so we had put a lot of emphasis and a lot of attention on leaving well. And I think all up, we had seven functions of different sorts that were around farewell for us and opportunities for us to say goodbye to our friends and family and our workplaces and our schools and our life in South Africa. And really, I mean, we made the decision probably a year before we left, 6 months before we left, it was all about the departure. And the last month, it was 100% all about the departure, all those farewell parties. I mean, some of those farewell functions felt like it was our funeral, because friends and family would share in a way that you share when you're at someone's funeral, because you know that you're not going to see one another anytime soon. So we had a huge emphasis on leaving well, and we really well and truly left well. And then we arrived here back in Australia. And for me, I'd been gone 10 years. My husband had never lived here. He was born and raised in South Africa.
So the only person coming back was you.
That's right. The only person re-entering was me. My children, my husband had never lived here before. And we had actually not thought at all about re-entry. And that wasn't even a phrase that I was really familiar with. It wasn't on my radar to consider how might I re-enter what is my home and yet doesn't feel like home because it hasn't been home for over 10 years.
Hence the term I want to introduce here, reverse culture shock. And if you're listening to this and you've experienced this in maybe a way akin to Olivia's, you may not have gone to somewhere in such desperate need in the way that Olivia was working in South Africa, but if you've been away from Australia for some time and returned, have you gone through something like reverse culture shock? You can always leave a comment on the RN Life Matters Facebook page. Olivia, what were some of the shocks that awaited you when you got back to what is home country?
Well, it was everything from really small aspects to really big ones. So one of the first memories I have is we had rented a house and we'd organised that from South Africa. We got here, we landed, we moved into the house and the kids had gone to sleep. My husband and I were sitting in the lounge room and the silence really shocked us. The houses here in Melbourne, in the city, are so well built. The walls are so thick, the insulation's so good, that once you're in your house, you can't really hear anything that's going on outside. And I said to my husband, I feel like we're the only two people in the world. In South Africa, clearly the houses weren't quite as well built. And you could hear your neighbours whistling. You could hear cars on the road. You could hear dogs barking. You could hear chickens if you were in the rural communities. There was never a silence. And the silence of life here was quite deafening. And I think it speaks
Was it terrifying?
It was confronting. Because
right.
We felt that we were quite isolated. And there's also, within Melbourne City, not a culture of popping in. So if you're at home at night, you're not likely to have neighbours or friends or visitors just popping in unannounced. You know,
no.
Everything's very scheduled and very planned and often booked in weeks or months in advance.
Did you find that with friends?
Yeah. I remember getting here and being like, great, I'm back, you know, when can we catch up? And much to my shock, friends would say, oh, I've got 2 hours free on Saturday in 6 weeks' time. And then I was really shocked by that and I'd have to, you know, say, okay, well, we'll put that in our diary. You know, life in Melbourne, it's very overscheduled, it's very busy. And I must say, now that we've been back, we've fallen into that same trap. But when we first arrived, it really shocked us because in South Africa, there was just a culture of unplanned spontaneous catch-ups, people popping in. It's kind of considered rude these days to pop in Melbourne.
Without giving forewarning.
That's right.
Well, yep. Not just to Melbourne, across capital cities and across Australian life.
Yep.
Maybe not so more in regional, rural and remote Australia, where I think that practice is still very much encouraged,
yep.
But certainly in our cities. Olivia, when it comes to parenting, when you, as the mother of three children, would gather with other mothers of children of similar age, how did the conversations go?
When we were back here?
Yeah, back here.
Yeah, it was tough because people, when you've lived overseas and you've had an experience abroad and you come back, it's very hard to communicate the experience that you've had. And the people who didn't go through that with you, who didn't live in that place, they really don't have a grasp of what it involved. And it's very hard to communicate it in a way that makes sense,
yeah.
Unless someone's been there and gone through it themselves. So we tend to keep the conversation on the here and now, on what we're sharing in common now. As parents, I mean, even the risk culture, the risk averseness here in Australia really shocked us as well as parents. You know, we got back and we were setting up our house and my friend came over and she said, oh, you've got blind. You can't have those straps hanging down, the blind levers, because children choke and can die from those. And I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll have to put those up. And then she said, oh, you've got a bookshelf and you haven't attached it to the wall. You know, children die because the bookshelves fall off the walls. You have to attach everything to the walls. So there was all these elements even of parenting that we just had no idea about because South Africa is not as risk averse as Australia.
Well, the risks are a little deeper.
That's right.
Perhaps in your mind, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're thinking, well, I know of children who died from HIV.
That's
not
right.
Because they choked on a cord from a blind.
That's right. You're exactly right. We didn't really in South Africa have the luxury, if you want to call it that, of being concerned about those types of risks when the risks were HIV and AIDS, they were TB, they were serious violent crime. So those were the risks that essentially led us to move back here.
My guest is Olivia Mieza, and we're talking here about what it was like for her and her family, but more for her because she'd always lived here until she left 10 years ago to go to South Africa. Coming back, the re-entry and the reverse culture shock that she experienced as a result. Tell us about the time your car broke down.
Well, that was only a couple of weeks after we'd been back, and the car broke down. Now, I just fell into old habits, and in South Africa, our cars broke down quite regularly, I must admit. And whenever that happened, we'd call a friend, a number of friends who we could call, who would drop what they were doing. They would come, they would tow us, or they'd go and get petrol if that was what we needed. But it was this culture of leaning on one another in your time of need. And we were called to do that for friends. We called on friends to do that for us. So when our car broke down here in Australia, I automatically called my sister. And I said, oh, we've broken down. She said, oh, sorry to hear that. I said, so can you come and help? She said, what? I said, well, are you going to come and help us? She said, call the RACV. And, you know, it was one of those moments when I realised that Australia is such an individualistic society. You have to just look after yourselves and set up what you need to support yourself. There's not so much this culture of leaning on one another and being vulnerable in times of need and coming to help each other. And
well, we're a very serviced society as well, not just individuals, right. But serviced. And in fact, did you not find some real shocks when dealing with things like the welfare system or going to a doctor?
Yeah, they were pleasant surprises. They absolutely blew us away, and they still do now, and they're things that we give thanks for all the time as parents. I remember the first time we needed to take one of our children to the hospital, and we went through emergency at the hospital, saw a doctor, we got an x-ray, and, you know, we didn't pay a cent. And sure, we had a little weight, but it was nothing compared to the weight that we would have faced in a government hospital in South Africa. I mean, people die waiting. People are literally on stretchers in hallways in the hospitals, the government hospitals in South Africa, and then the private hospitals are extraordinarily expensive. So we were overwhelmed with gratefulness for the government health system, the fact that it is free, it is of good quality. Same goes with the education systems. We are so grateful for the free education that our children are currently receiving in the government schools.
Yep.
And the fact that it's right up there, it's world class, and we don't pay for it. We hardly pay for it.
And yet internally, of course, we're constantly debating and arguing amongst ourselves about the pitfalls and the wrongness of those systems and what's not working and what's not delivering. So it's great to have a wake-up call from an Australian who's seen another perspective. Olivia, when it comes to your own personal sense of self and feeling at peace with who you are back in the old country, you were finding it quite hard. You reached out to an organisation to help, didn't you?
That's right. I was really struggling because when you come back to what was previously your home and now needs to be your home again, you come with all these expectations. And the reality is always different to the expectations. Some surprise you in a positive way and others disappoint you in a negative way. And every single relationship within your friends and your family needs to be renegotiated. You need to work out, what does this relationship look like now that I'm back, now that we can see each other, now that we can pick up the phone and speak to one another. So that process is challenging. And I actually started just doing some Googling to find out if anyone else struggled with this issue of re-entry. And much to my delight, I found that it wasn't just me. It was actually something that a lot of people go through. And I think,
you around know, the world.
Around the world, that's right. And I think we're really in this era when travel is so common and many people spend extended times away from their home culture and their home society. So there are more and more people going through this process of re-entry. So I actually ended up doing a re-entry course. It was called the Re-entry Relaunch Roadmap, and it was by an organisation called Small Planet Studio, if anyone else is struggling with the same issue and wants to reach out to them.
And what do they help you do?
So they help you to re-enter. It was a 6-week course. It was done online. We got sent a workbook that we worked our way through. We had Skype and Zoom video meetings with other people who were doing the course at the same time, who were from all over the world.
And just hearing their stories, I can imagine echoing back into yours, you go, I don't feel so alone.
That's right. And I think one of the big takeouts for me of doing that course was to turn the way I was seeing the transition. I had been seeing it as an ending. The ending of my life that I'd known and my family relationships, my friendships, my work, my identity. And the course helped me to see that actually this move is also a beginning. Mm. There is an ending and you need to grieve that. It's a real grief, but there's also a beginning and there's a whole new chapter ahead. And the course helps you to get excited about that new beginning.
And part of Olivia's new chapter is she's working with Hope Street Youth Homelessness, which you can see and hear, of course, fits in quite well with her concerns about social justice and health outcomes for all of us. Olivia, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Olivia Meazza, and she has been here on Life Matters. You can hear that story again anytime you like by downloading from the Life Matters website or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Michael McKenzie. You're on RN.